La voz de la memoria. Información, reflexión y debate sobre la memoria histórica. Canal de difusión de las actividades y de la riqueza documental, bibliográfica y didáctica de la Casa de la Memoria La Sauceda. Golpe, guerra y represión.
Viva la Quinta Brigada, rumba la rumba la rumba la.
Un ciclo de conferencias organizado por la Asociación Casa de la Memoria.
Que nos cubrirá de glorias, ay Carmela, ay Carmela.
Del 16 al 26 de julio de 2021.
Que nos cubrirá de glorias, ay Carmela, ay Carmela.
Sebastian Brown, doctor en historia, miembro de la Associated Lecture de la School of Humanities de la Canterbury Christ Church University, autor del libro Medicine and Conflict, The Spanish Civil War and Its Traumatic Legacy, hablará sobre la sanidad en la guerra.
Hello, my name is Sebastian Brown and I'm a British historian and associate of the School of Humanities at Canterbury Christ Church in England. I'm also part of a Spanish National Research Council team that carry out research into medical humanities. I completed my doctorate in 2017 at the University of Kent in England on medicine and surgery during the Spanish Civil War, and the book that came out of this, Medicine and Conflict, the Spanish Civil War and its Traumatic Legacy, published in 2019, not only looks at the medical care received by civilians and combatants in both the Republican and insurgent zones, but also engages closely with historic memory as the trauma of the Civil War and the legacy of post-war Francoism continue to affect Spanish society to this day. For my talk today, I will be looking at one of the medical advances that took place during the Spanish Civil War, blood transfusion and blood banks. With the latter, contrary to what you might read on the internet, which states that these were first created in Chicago in 1937, first developed in Spain shortly after the insurgency against the legitimately elected Spanish government in the summer of 1936. As someone who has close ties with Jimena, I lived here for a while as a child in the 1970s. My research over the last 8 or 9 years has also examined the Spanish Civil War, both from a regional Andalusian perspective, as well as at a more local Campo de Gibraltar level, and the excellent research carried out locally by historians such as Fernando Sigla, José Manuel Argalani, Luis Antonio García Bravo, and Jesús Majaranela, amongst others, made it possible for me to complete my thesis. It is this more local and regional perspective that I will be exploring today through an examination of the flight from Malaga to Almeria of between 120 and 150,000 refugees as a result of its fall to the insurgents in early February 1937. So what connects this mass exodus from a city swarming with refugees, including many who had fled there from the Campo de Gibraltar in fear of the brutal repression which they knew would follow if they stayed, with the history of medicine? Well, the short answer is Dr. Norman Bethune, but as we will find out, this is not the whole story. Norman Bethune was a Canadian chest surgeon who came to Spain in November 1936, like so many other international medical volunteers, to offer support to the Republican cause. Although there were a few, very few, who volunteered for Franco, such as the British aristocrat Priscilla Scott Ellis, who received her initial training as a nurse at the Hospital for the Moroccan Wounded in Jerez in 1937. A somewhat difficult character by all accounts, Bethune's services as a surgeon were not required at that point on the Madrid front, so he turned his attention to blood transfusion, helping to establish a blood bank service in Madrid, the Instituto Hispano-Canadiense de Transfusión de Sangre, and this was in December 1936, and it's often referred to as the first mobile blood blood bank transfusion service, although this honour in fact was owed to Dr. Frederic Duran Jorda, who had established the first mobile blood bank towards the end of August 1936, when a fish truck was converted for the transportation of conserved blood to the injured at the front. However, it was supplies of blood that Bethune tried to take to the front of Malaga from Barcelona early in February 37, and his role in helping refugees fleeing the city's fall, which is central to this talk, as the pamphlet, to give it its full name, The Crime on the Road Malaga-Almeria, narrative with graphic documents revealing fascist cruelty, was the first published eyewitness account of the exodus, and was published shortly after the fall of Malaga, not only in English, but it was also published in Spanish and French. Now, before we come to the role of Bethune, but also that of Ángeles Vázquez León, a resident of Jimena who fled her village with her family at the age of 14 before its fall to the insurgents in September 1936, and then who then had to flee Malaga before its capture, eventually ending up in a concentration camp in Algeria before returning to Jimena via France in 1939, and to a British resident of Malaga, Peter Chalmers Mitchell, the retired zoologist who created the world's first open zoological park, Whipnade Zoo, and who bore witness to the flight of refugees. I think it important to give a bit of background first to what was happening with regards to blood transfusion that took place at the start of and during the Spanish Civil War, and second to the fall of Malaga itself. The traditional technique of blood transfusion most common at the start of the conflict was direct arm-to-arm transfusion. A cannula, that's a hollow needle, was placed into the vein in the arm of the donor. This was connected by a length of tube with a valve in the middle to regulate flow direction to a cannula placed in the vein of the recipient, who then received a quantity of blood from the donor, which usually totaled about 300 to 400 millimetres of blood. Millilitres of blood. Techniques and apparatus did vary, but this was the basic principle of the technique, and this remained the most common method of blood transfusion throughout the conflict. Although stored blood, which was basically blood taken from a donor which had had sodium citrate added, which meant it could be refrigerated and stored for about 18 days to 3 weeks, was to contribute towards saving lives, the arm-to-arm method was still the main means by which blood was transfused during the conflict. This resulted from the sheer amount of battlefield and civilian casualties, but also because numerous surgeons favoured the traditional method, which they considered a safer technique. What made Spain different at the time to other nations was a near parallel acceleration in both the insurgent and loyalist zones of methods for storing and delivering blood to the front in far greater quantities than had been achieved previously. Practices were similar on both sides, with stored blood usually destined for use in the most gravely wounded. And regardless of whose services were involved, these practices were very similar. Nevertheless, the role of the blood donor in the opposing zones reflected different ideological approaches regarding the donation of blood. In the Republican zone, giving blood was frequently phrased as an anti-fascist activity suitable for both women and men, whereas in the insurgent zone, the donation of blood was clearly linked to traditional notions of Catholic womanhood, closely tied to a woman's perceived role as a nurturer subordinate to men. Apart from the Barcelona service and the one set up by Bethune, there was also one set up by Carlos Elósegui in the insurgent zone, and which provided conserved blood across a wide front, and is credited with having provided 25,000 transfusions, the largest number recorded for any one service. Now, some, if not most of you, may be aware of the events surrounding the fall of Malaga to the insurgents on the 8th of February 1937. But for those of you who aren't, the following is a brief recap. Franco basically had been occupied with the idea of conquering Madrid. Malaga, a revolutionary city like Barcelona, was difficult to defend in the sense that the rebels in February 37 could attack wherever they wanted and when they wanted, as it was pretty much isolated from the rest of Republican Spain, except for the narrow coastal road to Almeria. This was a good opportunity for Franco to encourage the fascist dictator of Italy, Benito Mussolini, with victory more or less assured, to put at the disposal of General Queipo de Llano, the effective viceroy of Andalusia, Italian troops at the head of the attack on Malaga. With the absence of military support from the legitimate government to this troubled city, insurgent troops with the assistance of Italian fascist, in inverted commas, volunteers, that's what they were called, they were Italian volunteer corps, although they were nothing of the sort, Moroccan regulares, the Spanish Foreign Legion, the insurgents entered the capital of the Costa del Sol on the February 8th, 1937, and they were also assisted in this by the presence of German sea power in the form of the battleship, the Graf Spee. As the voice of Radio Sevilla, Queipo, the Butcher of Andalusia, as he was also known, used this platform to instill fear in his opponents and to push the idea that gender violence against leftist women was legitimate. This was a tool of repression used extensively by the insurgents during the Civil War, but continued to be used well after the war had finished as a means of subjugating women, forming part of the collective punishment imposed on those who had opposed the insurgency. In one speech, he stated that, quote, "Our brave legionnaires and regulares have shown the red cowards what it means to be a real man, and incidentally the wives of the reds too." This is totally justified as these communist and anarchist women practice free love. Now at least they know what real men are and not homo militiamen. They will not free themselves no matter how much they squeal and kick. End quote. Context of this is important, as those who fled Malaga knew that the repression that was in store for them encompassed them all, as somewhere between 50,000 to 90,000 refugees, many of them from provincial villages and towns including Jimena, La Salceda, Estepona, Aranda, etc., had added to the city's population of 188,000, and they brought with them news of the rapes, mutilations and thefts carried out by the Moroccan regulares, but which were also carried out by falanges, raqueteers, señoritos and legionnaires. And therefore it was common knowledge that it was not just the men who would suffer the reprisals. So before the rebel forces entered the city, the refugees began their desperate flight towards Almería to avoid capture. After the international outcry that followed the slaughter of up to 4,000 people, mainly civilians, in the bullring at Badajoz the previous August by soldiers under the command of General Yagüe, where murder and mass rape continued for days, Franco, concerned to avoid a similar outcry, took the step of banning all war correspondents from Malaga. There are claims that he ordered such massacres to cease, but one of the reasons that the civil war lasted as long as it did was that for Franco, exterminating opposition in the rearguard was an important part of how he waged the war, and he wanted to ensure that there were as few witnesses as possible to the brutal repression he knew that Chiapa would unleash in capturing the city. It is for this reason that the crime on the road Malaga to Almería is an important historical document. A part of this importance lies in the fact that there were few external witnesses to the flight of the refugees from Malaga after the city's fall in February 37. Effectively, apart from the refugee themselves and their pursuers, there were few independent observers of this tragic flight, which makes the testimony of Bethune and the accompanying photos one of the few contemporary documents that survive. Written by Bethune with photographs by his assistant, the Canadian architect Hassan Size, it originated from their experiences in the company of Thomas Worsley, a driver of the vehicle alongside Size, en route to the Malaga battlefront with the intent to deliver blood in the specially adapted ambulance with, quote, a refrigeration truckload of preserved blood from Barcelona, end quote. A clear indication of the importance of the service of Durand Jorda in the Catalan capital, but also an indicator of the fact that during this brief period, the Madrid service was too busy to supply blood to other fronts. Instead of completing this task, the three used the ambulance to help scores of refugees who had evacuated Malaga. Bethune actually left a typescript in which he recorded having covered 2,488 kilometres over 85.8 hours between his drive south from Barcelona on the 5th of February 1937 and his return to Madrid on the 16th of the same month. This document provides further evidence for the validity of the crime on the road Malaga-Almería as a historical source, and also stands testimony to the ground he and his team covered in aiding the refugees. It was not until well after the demise of Franco that accounts such as those of Ángeles Vázquez León began to appear and the appalling truth began to more fully emerge. And therefore, for a long time, this was the only document that really, one of the very few documents that actually described what happened. So the following is a brief description of the booklet, but at the end of the transcript to this talk, there are links to both the English and Spanish versions of this document for anybody interested in taking a closer look. The introduction is by an anarchist journalist, Alardo Prats, and he sets the scene by describing, quote, most of the people, crazed by panic and desperation, took the road to Motril and Almería, a whole town in flight. They fled from Malaga, which had just been occupied by the legions of Italians and Germans, by Moors and the Tercio. And he goes on, quote, very soon, it was the day of the 10th of February, an ambulance, painted grey, attempted to open a way in the opposite direction to that of the tumultuous human torrent. To the right and left of the road, hundreds of wounded, children calling in vain for their parents, and fainting women with feet horribly swollen and bleeding, tormented by hunger and thirst, had fallen, completely overcome. Others fell dead. The ambulance carried on its side the following inscription, permanent service of blood transfusion. On the front seat, dressed in blue overalls, were three men, the Canadian doctor Norman Bethune, his assistant Hassan Size, and the driver, also Canadian. These three men were among the first to go to the aid of the sick, children, women and wounded who fled from Malaga and the villages on the way from that capital to Almería, impelled by the terror of fascist domination. End quote. Now, clearly this is a propaganda document, and it continues in much the same vein in the main body of the text written by Bethune. But propaganda can often be the first draft of the truth, and this booklet contains much that is factual. For instance, references to horribly swollen and bleeding feet are found among the written testimonies of some of the survivors. A Boomerang in Jimena de la Frontera, War, Flight and Exile of a Girl from the Campo de Gibraltar, written by Ángeles Vázquez León, contains a vivid description of how, due to her inability to walk any further due to the state of her feet, this nearly led to her being captured by the forces pursuing the refugees along the coastal road after their evacuation from Malaga. As she states in a memoir, it was as a result of the blisters on her feet that had burst, leaving her feet wet, that she became separated from her family. She tried to catch up with them and, quote, walked dragging my feet along the ground. There were no longer so many people on the road. Everyone had speeded up. I carried on like that for a while, but I could not take any more as my feet hurt so much that I wanted to scream. So I gave in, end quote. She abandoned all hope and sat on a rock on a promontory looking out to sea. It was only her rescue by a fleeing militiaman on horseback that saved her from possible rape and a likely death. And she was fortunately reunited with her family while still on the road to Almeria. Ángeles' description of the evacuation from Malaga tying closely with what Bethune describes, including how the refugees were shelled from the sea and machine gunned from the air by Italian planes, and thousands were to die in the exodus as a result of injuries sustained, but also from exhaustion and the bitter cold of exposure. The opening preamble by Alardo Prats is also supported by what Peter Chalmers Mitchell himself observed of the flight of the refugees. Chalmers Mitchell, incidentally, is an interesting figure. In the hills behind Malaga, for instance, anarchists with his assistants set up a hospital in the appropriated house of Tomas Bolin, who was uncle of Franco's press agent and staff officer Luis Bolin, and whose family, the family of Tomas Bolin, he'd helped to escape to Gibraltar. Chalmers Mitchell, in a letter to the Times in October 1936, commented that the CNT, quote, specialised in arranging new hospitals for wounded soldiers, end quote, although these did vary considerably in the services they were able to offer. Chalmers Mitchell, as a witness to the flight of the refugees fleeing the beleaguered Malaga city from advancing Italian troops, drew comparisons in his book My House in Malaga, published late in 1937, with what he had seen in pictures by the Spanish artist Goya. He observed at their initial flight that they were, quote, hurrying, pushing, groaning, screaming, faces mottled with grey and green and dull red, fear and misery turning them into one of Goya's most dreadful pictures. Goya, who saw these things more than a century ago, the dispossessed of the earth, driven only by dull, almost animal instincts of flight, end quote. In fact, an analysis of some of the photos by size in the booklet do indeed bear a striking comparison to Goya, although whether this was by accident or by design, it will never be known. There is also a photo of a forlorn woman by the roadside with the caption, waiting for help, a baby asleep in her lap, her chest half uncovered, giving the impression that she had recently suckered her child, even though her withered breasts barely looked capable of producing any milk. Now, this image is very similar to the female figure to be found bottom left of the painting Guernica by Picasso, except that in the photo, her eyes and head are looking downward. You know, her eyes are looking downwards. But with Malaga being the birthplace of Picasso, it strikes me that the terrible trauma of those who were forced to flee the beleaguered city would undoubtedly have had an influence on the construction of this work. And for me, this image is clearly associated with the photo. Incidentally, going back to Chalmers Mitchell, it was through Gibraltar, in this case from England, that Chalmers Mitchell had bought a supply of syringes and a large quantity of morphia to supplement the supplies for the hospital adjoining his house in Malaga in the last week of December 1936. To get to Malaga from Gibraltar, he had to wait several days before he could board a British destroyer bound for Malaga. As by this stage, apart from the narrow coastal road to Almeria, Malaga was largely cut off, isolated, and poorly supplied. Unfortunately, there is not the time to go into any great depth in looking at the pamphlet. However, two of the photos, although faded with age, do show damaged feet. A photo of a young child with her back to the camera, a doll discarded by her feet, apparently holding her hands to her eyes, crying with the caption, "Nothing matters now, not even her doll." She is in fact actually eating sugar cane next to a disused railway track from the Malaga sugar industry. But this does not diminish the fact that those who were lucky enough to find such meagre sustenance were able to survive a little longer. However, many thousand were to die on the road from Malaga to Almeria. And to give the final words of this talk to Norma of the Thune, who died in China in 1939 of blood poisoning working for the revolutionary forces of Mao Zedong, I quote, "Now, what was the crime that these unarmed civilians had committed to be murdered in this bloody manner? The only crime was that they had voted to elect a government of the people, committed to the most moderate alleviation of the crushing burden of centuries of the greed of capitalism. The question has been raised, why did they not stay in Malaga and await the entrance of the fascists? They knew what would happen to them. They knew what would happen to their men and women, as had happened to so many, as had happened so many times before in other captured towns. Every male between the age of 15 and 60 who could not prove that he had not by force been made to assist the government would immediately be shot. And it is this knowledge that has concentrated two-thirds of the entire population of Spain in one half of the country that is still held, that is held by the Republic." End quote. Thank you for listening to this talk.
En los frentes de Granada, rumba la rumba la rumba la la. No tenemos días lunes, ay Carmela, ay Carmela. No tenemos días lunes, ay Carmela, ay Carmela.
That brings us to the end of this episode. Thank you for listening to the podcast of La Voz de la Memoria in English.
Aquí finaliza el episodio de la serie correspondiente. Gracias por escuchar los podcasts de La Voz de la Memoria.